Are you struggling to keep up with the demands of managing and securing identity in your distributed enterprise IT environment? You're not alone, but don't let it hold you back. With Strata's Identity Orchestration Platform, you can secure all your apps on any cloud with any IDP, so your IT teams will never have to refactor for identity again. Imagine modernizing app identity in minutes instead of months, deploying passwordless on any tricky old app, and achieving business resilience with always-on identity, all from one lightweight and flexible platform. Want to see it in action? Share your identity challenge with us on a discovery call, and we'll hook you up with a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Don't miss out. Visit strata.io/cloudcast. That's strata.io/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the Massive Studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our Massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it is Aaron for Cloud News this week. But also, stick around after the break. We have a really good topic and set of guests. If you have heard of Backstage and IDPs, internal developer portals, well, we have a great show coming up for you. But let's get started with Cloud News. First of all, HashiCorp released earnings last week and did really, really well. Stock is up, or at least it was last week, and some interesting things out of their report. The net loss was down very significantly, $227 million loss last year, $49 million loss this year. But what is really interesting to me was actually the growth in number of customers. They went from 2,700 to 4,100 in 1 year. That is a really significant jump. Really glad to see the growth from them. And of course, there's a lot more in the report that you could dig into, and the link is in the show notes for that. Moving on to article number two. There is a new startup out there called SpeedScale that raised a $9 million pre-seed round. And this was an interesting concept to me because I really hadn't seen in the Kubernetes space a company like this just yet. There might be some out there, and if they are, please let me know. But SpeedScale really specializes in what they're calling traffic replication. So think of it this way. If you're certainly an API-driven company and even a SaaS-based company, how do you test at scale, right? Like in the industry, you used to use the term smoke testing, right? How do you smoke test these things? And they have a set of tools that will basically record production quality inputs and a stream of API calls, and then be able to replicate that at will so that you can then really move testing for scale into your CI/CD pipelines. Interesting concept, and it's not something new. It's certainly been done in other areas before, but I haven't seen it specifically in the Kubernetes space yet. So certainly good luck to them, and we'll see if we can potentially maybe get them on the show in the future as well. And speaking of APIs, I do have two other stories in there. They both came from James Higginbotham's API newsletter. One of them is Why API First Will Lead Digital Transformation in 2023. I thought that was a good article. And the other one is How APIs Can Make or Break Your Workflow. This one is a little bit more in-depth, and I certainly thought it was a very good read, and you should go check that out. And also to address the big thing, we didn't cover Silicon Valley Bank because we covered it on the Sunday Perspective show. And so I didn't feel the need to go into that. And also, by the way, that, you know, that situation is changing day to day, hour to hour. So I didn't want to necessarily dig into that one this week. So we're going to hold off on Silicon Valley Bank news for now, even though it is certainly an extremely big article. As I mentioned earlier, coming up right after the break, we have the folks over at Rode.io to really tell us about Backstage and internal developer portals. And that's coming up right after the break.
Are you interested in learning more about GitOps and continuous delivery? Join the Continuous Delivery Foundation and the Cloud Native Computing Foundation for CDCon plus GitOpsCon happening May 8th and 9th in Vancouver. The event will foster collaboration, discussion, and knowledge sharing by bringing communities to start shaping the future of GitOps and CD. We're excited to offer a special discount code for Cloudcast listeners. Simply use the code PODCAST10 for 10% off when you register. Act fast. That's PODCAST10 when you register for GitOpsCon and CDCon. Today's sponsor is Datadog, a real-time monitoring platform that unifies metrics, logs, and distributed traces from your cloud containers and orchestration software. Datadog's container-centric monitoring features allow you to track the health and performance of your dynamic container environment. The container map provides a bird's-eye view of your container fleet, and the live container view searches, groups, and filters your containers with any criteria, like tags, pods, or workspaces. To start monitoring your container clusters, sign up for a free trial today, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/container-cloudcast to get started. That's datadog.com/container-cloudcast.
And we're back. And this week we have a topic that actually has been very requested by the listeners out there. We did our look-ahead shows at the beginning of the year, and one of the topics we did in look-ahead shows was platform engineering. And platform engineering, that show, both got a lot of listens as well as a lot of feedback. And we also got some folks asking us, well, what's next, right? And one of the big things we've been talking about in the community is Backstage, CNCF project, and the concept of internal developer portals. And so joining us today, we have Martina Iglesias, CTO at Rhodey, and David Toot, CEO at Rhodey. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And so why don't we start off with this? Why don't we give everyone a brief introduction, both how you got started with Backstage and IDPs in general. Martina, why don't you go first, please?
Sure. Well, my story starts several years ago. I used to work for Spotify, and I have seen Backstage, or the internal version of Backstage that they use at Spotify, since the beginning, pretty much. Especially its predecessor called System C, that I think I talked about as well in some conferences. And it was a pretty small website in the beginning with some metadata about microservices, and it grew into what today is called Backstage, and this developer portal that is becoming very famous. So I used it for a number of years, and I also was part of the team that was developing this internally and maintaining it. So it's been a few years using it and working with it.
Fantastic. David?
Yeah, I wasn't at Spotify, but my journey started about 7 years ago at Workday. I was hired there as the first engineer to build a deployment tool UI, and that eventually became the developer portal that we built inside Workday. I was part of the platform team there, and we were going through a transformation from a heavily monolithic architecture to something a bit more distributed. As part of that, we had people creating lots and lots of services, and then we experienced the normal kind of software catalog problems of what is all this stuff and how do people use it. We solved that problem in Workday by building a developer portal and software catalog. And I thought it was such a cool thing, and it was solving some interesting business problems, that I decided to quit my job in the first lockdown of the pandemic in 2020 and try to start a company, which eventually became Rhodey. I was originally going to start kind of build a proprietary solution, because Backstage hadn't really been open source at that point. And I handed in my notice, quit my job in Workday, and then 2 or 3 days later, somebody from Spotify contacted me on LinkedIn and sent me over a link to the open source Backstage repository. And you can imagine my first reaction was, oh, holy moly, somebody or Spotify are going to open source my entire product vision here. But I got talking to the team at Spotify, and they seemed happy to have us working in the space and helping to push the project forward. And so we've been doing that for the past 2.5-3 years.
So that's probably one of the ultimate even pre-funding pivot stories for a startup.
Yeah, it was actually I had just secured, I hadn't signed the term sheet yet, but I had just secured my first batch of funding Then I found Blackstage, and I had to kind of go back to those investors and go, hey, I know you've agreed to give me this money, but I'm going to pivot the business already. Is that okay? It was an interesting conversation, but luckily they were happy to, you know, back me and the idea, and it didn't really matter what Spotify had done.
That's fantastic. So for everyone that's listening, if you're not familiar with Backstage, first of all, let me kind of start there. So it was, of course, spun out of Spotify, as you both talked about, and it's now a CNCF project. And it is a project that is about a developer portal and building, and I'll use the term, you know, making everything a common standard for developers. So let's kind of maybe start there real quickly. Martina, what problems were developers seeing that created the origin story, if you will, of Backstage? You know, what pain were you trying to solve for?
There were a number of small issues that were growing at the moment. If I talk about System C, which is the predecessor of Backstage, what was happening at the time was that we had maybe a few hundred developers, and we had a microservices architecture, and the number of services was growing and growing, and the number of developers that we had to onboard was also growing. So at some point we were thinking, okay, can anyone answer the question, what is deployed in production right now? And that was becoming more and more difficult to answer. And we wanted to also know, okay, who is owning each of these services? And we couldn't answer very easily. And so with the growing complexity of the system, onboarding new engineers was becoming more difficult. That's when we decided we need to inventorize all of the things we have in production in one place. And we need to make it very accessible for everyone in the company so that everyone can discover what is deployed in production, for those things deployed in production, who is owning them, and what is the overall architecture of all these microservices that are talking to each other. Because when one has a monolith, it's perhaps easier to understand just following the code, what is talking to what part of the code. But when you shift that complexity towards the outer layer right on top with microservices talking to each other, then it becomes more difficult to track over time as the network of services grow. So those were the things that prompted us to create this inventory that would track the metadata for each service, especially ownership. And we discovered a few interesting things. For example, we discovered that we had services that were owned by individuals instead of teams. So that was the first big thing that was fixed thanks to the original Backstage or System C.
Yeah, it's the typical never create a single point of failure in your company scenario, right? And so this pain, like all everything you just talked about, has really resonated with the community for sure. I mean, Backstage has quickly grown to be one of the most popular CNCF projects. And so, David, what are some of the long-term advantages of consolidating this development experience onto a Backstage platform that you've seen with some of the customers?
Yeah, I totally agree about the resonance. I mean, we were seeing the exact same problems inside Workday, and I think you can tell from the community reaction that many other companies have the exact same problem. And part of the reason I started Rody was that when I talked to software developers in other companies, they all seemed to have kind of hacked together some sort of software catalog solution, just like we had at Workday. And, you know, it was quite obvious that this was a growing problem. And I think that's why Backstage has landed so well amongst the community. But yeah, long-term advantages are, you know, pretty clear at this point. It's really about, first and foremost, reducing cognitive load for devs, improving discoverability, making it easier to answer basic questions like, what have we got running in production? What versions of things are deployed where? What services have we got? You know, have we got a geocoding API? Does it have builds? Is it integrated with the deployment platform? Like, all these kind of things are relatively difficult to answer inside companies, and it has a few negative knock-on effects. It just makes everybody's work a little bit more difficult. Spotify, interestingly, measured this by tracking time to 10th commit for new joiners to the company, and Backstage was able to help them reduce that time to 10th commit number by 75%, just by making it easier for people to know what's going on. The other benefits that we see across our customer base are reduced time to production for new services. So Backstage has a templating system that allows people to create new software with the best practices of the organization built in. You might have heard the term golden patch thrown around, and this is related to that. But for example, you know, one of our customers, Caribou, has cut the time to production for a new piece of software down from 2 months to 10 minutes using this functionality. The second benefit of that is that you get better standardization. Because you're giving people a standard way to create new software, you end up with more standardized software in production, which is ultimately like easier to operate and easy to manage over time. There's also standardization of tools, right? People have one interface into lots of different tools, and it's easy to just jump in there first day joining the company, or if you've joined a new team, and just get started straight away, understand what tools you need to use, when, what's available. So really, discoverability and standardization are two kind of long-term benefits of the tool.
Fantastic. And Martina, let me ask you this, because something we've seen in kind of the history of the podcast here is, you know, we saw the rise of PaaS, you know, platform as a service, right? And then it kind of went by the wayside a little bit over conversation. And it seems to be, not that this is a PaaS, but the whole idea of a platform is coming back. But something we've seen is there's always a healthy, I'll use the word tension, with development platforms. You know, sometimes the platform becomes prescriptive, right? And there's almost a little bit of like, okay, you use these tools and these versions and these libraries, and this is what is available because this is what we've standardized. But then the developers will push back and say, wait a second, that's not the version I need, or this isn't the tool I use. And so there's always been a bit of a balance going on between setting standards to consolidate, but providing freedom of choice. And so how have you seen that in the past, and how is that addressed?
Indeed, that's a delicate balance that you want to have in your company. On one hand, you want people to be autonomous, right, and to be able to make the choices that are fit for their solving their problems. And on the other hand, the more standardization that you have, the faster you can be, because you can have teams working on infrastructure for the rest of the developers, and that platform will make them faster. So I think in this regard, Backstage has applied the principles of autonomy and golden paths. And that came from Spotify. So the idea is that you have certain degree of autonomy in your team to decide what you want to do. But there's also these paved ways, these golden paths that will make what you normally have to do so easy and so fast that you will most likely choose that path over going on your own. And that's applied to Backstage as well, because Backstage is very flexible. It's open source, so it can be tweaked very easily. It integrates with other tools, third-party services or internal tools. So it's not really prescribing what kind of tools you need to use or how to do things. It's a collection of plugins, meaning you can build your own plugin for your internal tooling if you need it. Tech Docs, for example, is technical documentation and is based on Markdown, so it's pretty easy to write documentation for that. And also on our side, Drowdy is backwards compatible with open source Backstage, and we include a lot of open source plugins, and we allow customers to add their own plugins, so it's also pretty flexible, and people can bring their own tooling and infrastructure.
Fantastic. And David, I kind of want to follow up on this concept of an IDP real quick. We've had a number of guests on here recently to talk about platform engineering, and we do cloud news every week, and there's a lot of articles being written about it right now. It's definitely kind of having its moment, if you will. And one of the most common takeaways I've seen is, you know, somebody asks, well, why do I need platform engineering? And the answer becomes, because you need an IDP, you know, you need that internal developer platform. And so it almost becomes the output product of platform engineering. And maybe that is partially to help justify why do you need platform engineering. But I've also seen articles say, well, you don't necessarily need the IDP as much as you need the automation or the standards or the workflows or the golden paths. So what is your thoughts? Do you agree with this statement? What has your experience shown? Is it more about IDP as a product, or is it more about an outcome? Like, tell me a little bit about where your thinking is with that.
Yeah, so I guess I would say two things about that. Firstly, you know, Backstage's ethos is really to integrate with what's already there or augment the things that are already there to improve them. It's not really trying to replace the deployment tooling that a company will already have. And that's part of the autonomy that Backstage wants to maintain. It wants you to be able to define what it means to go to production inside your company yourself and have full control over that and mold Backstage to suit your needs. And really, like, yeah, our customers typically are platform engineering teams. And we find that company to company, the path to production or, you know, the deployment pipeline is really tailored for the specific needs of that company. There can be differences between them. And really where Backstage shines there is its ability to integrate with the pipeline that you want rather than prescribing its own solution, its own architecture, its own virtualization or whatever else it might be bringing. And, you know, the platform team, in my experience, they want to provide a really good product to their end users or the teams inside their company. And they're not trying to force people to use their platform, or at least they don't have a mandate to force people to use their platform. They know that they need to provide a good product and give value to the devs inside their company so that they will use the platform voluntarily. And Backstage is just part of that offering, and it becomes a window into this platform, and it becomes something that helps devs want to use the platform, and it just helps sell it and helps it spread throughout the organization in a very organic way.
So you used a really fantastic word there, mandate. So I'm going to, like, because it goes perfectly into what my next topic was going to be. What I've seen is a little bit of, you know, different mandates, not necessarily about this, but just mandates in our industry, mandate to go cloud first, mandate to use this tool, mandate to use these services, right? And I've read a few articles recently that about companies that built IDPs, but for one reason or another, the developers didn't adopt the platform. And maybe it was using that mandate, right? It was mandated, but wasn't adopted. And so question for really for both of you, do you have any insight into why an IDP succeeds or fails, or do you have tips on to make sure it's successful?
Yeah, for sure. We've seen this ourselves. This is the core reason why spreadsheets don't work to solve the software catalog problem. You would think that you can just catalog your software in a spreadsheet, and then you have a list of software and away you go. We tried that at Workday. It worked for, you know, some number of months, but really didn't scale to the solution. And the reason is that the spreadsheet just sits off and it's on an island somewhere. You know, maybe one person is kind of maintaining it or trying to keep it up to date, but there's not really any built-in pressure to keep that spreadsheet accurate and keep it up to date as the internal architecture of the company changes or new services get created or updated or whatever else. It'll get copy-pasted around the place and, you know, you'll lose the canonical version, and everyone will just get more confused than they were originally. Now, Backstage solves this problem in a really important way by being a tool that developers actually want to go into and use on a day-to-day basis. And so that actual usage for real-world use cases that are important to devs puts pressure on the correctness of the underlying data structure of the catalog. And that's really what helps it stay relevant and helps it stay fresh. And that's why it's able to provide value to the organization then through that, you know, correctness and freshness. Plugins are also key to this. The fact that companies can build their own Backstage plugins in order to do things like, you know, rebalance across regions or do deployments or whatever else it is that they need to do inside the IDP helps make it a place where devs actually need to do in order to do real work on a day-to-day basis. And again, things need to be correct, services need to be in there, or else they just can't work as effectively as possible. And so that's really why Backstage, that's the philosophy behind Backstage, and that's why it's able to succeed where some things like spreadsheets have failed and other IDPs have failed in the past. It's built for the developers more so than for just the VP of engineering or upper level management. And this, you know, has become apparent across our customer base. We have worked to try and spread this message as we roll out Backstage at different customers. And yeah, just on this topic, it is a hot topic amongst the backstage community at the moment. And we have put together a CNCF panel on this. It's going to be on March 30th. It's called Driving Adoption of Your Backstage IDP. And we're going to have one of our customers, Relativity, there to speak about their journey that they've been on. And we're also going to have CNCF Ambassador Casper Nissen from Lunar Bank. And he was talking about the journey that they've been on with Backstage over the past 3 years. So yeah, really important topic. It's worth putting some thought into it. But really the devs have to get value from the IDP for it to be loved and used inside the organization.
Fantastic. Martina, anything to add real quick?
No, not really.
Fantastic. So, and I'll just remind everyone, go check out the show notes for the podcast. The link to the session David was just talking about is in there, without a doubt. So definitely something worth checking out. Last topic before we close everyone out here for the week. Let's talk about operations for a little while. You know, I will say Backstage reminds me a little bit of Kubernetes in the fact that it doesn't have a reputation of being the easiest thing to configure and operate. You know, what I've heard is the learning curve up front is steep. And so is this where Backstage as a service comes into play, like we're starting to see with a lot of the Kubernetes distributions and other things in our industry, where a lot of things are really moving to an as-a-service model? And so, like, I'll just kind of, for both of you, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages to Backstage as a service, if you will?
Well, there's no disadvantages, that's for sure. you're right. Look, you're right. And it's worth recognizing Backstage is not a single Docker container that you can just launch into your Kubernetes cluster and away you go. It's a set of TypeScript libraries that you compose together in order to write your own developer portal, which then you need to kind of make code changes to and give love to over time in order to keep it up to date, but also keep it solving problems inside your organization. This is really what lets Rhodey exist, and this is where we add a lot of value for customers. So we're making it much faster to go from zero to getting value from Backstage on Rhodey. We're handling, you know, infrastructure, monthly upgrades, new feature uptake, tracking the community, making sure that we're baking in new features for our customers without them having to spend days each month understanding what's available and coding it into their own Backstage deployments. We think that we're 4 times less expensive than owning your own self-hosted Backstage deployment. We're also providing support and guidance. I mean, you heard us talk a little bit about rolling out Backstage in an organization. We're taking the lessons from our existing customer base, which at the moment is multiple dozens strong, and applying that to new organizations who come along and want to get the benefits of Backstage. And then lastly, we are building proprietary features on top of Backstage. We see Backstage as being a really good platform to add more value and deliver organizational change into our customer base. And so, for example, we're building scorecarding into Backstage to allow people to improve the maturity of the software in their organization over time and help teams deliver the best quality software that they can.
Fantastic. And quick follow-up, Martina, for you, when it comes to, like, I'll use the term variability, when it comes to the customization and the variability, where does that most, where is the complexity lie? Is it the plugin architecture? Is it the tools? Like, where do people tend to hit the most stumbling blocks from a technology standpoint?
I would say the different plugins that each company wants to use. So we have to add the open source plugins that exist manually into and bake them into Rhodey. And we've seen that different companies would use, of course, different third-party tools. So that means we need to support a wide range of different plugins and integrations. So that has been probably the most, the biggest variability we've seen.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, great. I'm going to close out for this week. David, Martina, is there anything else coming up of, you know, speaking engagements or where you're going to be or things you're doing at KubeCon? Like, where can everyone go find out more?
Well, they can certainly go to roadie.io. There may be BackstageCon at KubeCon North America this year. We did that last year, and it was a fantastic success. It's not totally dialed in yet, but we'll see if we can make that happen later in the year. Next big thing for us really is launching our scorecards product as generally available in 2 or 3 months. Really looking forward to that and just helping people get more value from Backstage.
Fantastic. Thank you very much and really appreciate your time this week. With that, I'm going to close us out for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And of course, as always, if you have feedback, go ahead and send that in to us. And if you're able to leave a review or leave a comment or tell a friend, we certainly appreciate it. And so on behalf of Brian and myself, we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.